Thanks for listening to the Stillbirth Matters podcast, brought to you by the Star Legacy Foundation. I'm Chris Duffy. Today's guest is Dr. Louise O'Brien. She's one of very few researchers actively investigating the impact of sleep-disordered breathing on adverse pregnancy outcomes. Dr. O'Brien earned her bachelor's and doctorate degrees in the United Kingdom after completing postdoctoral work in maternal and infant health research. She relocated to the United States in 2001 to train in pediatric sleep research. In 2006, she became a faculty member at the University of Michigan. Dr. O'Brien focuses her research on the impact of sleep-disordered breathing on adverse pregnancy outcomes, such as preeclampsia in the mother and growth retardation in the fetus. Since her arrival at the University of Michigan, Dr. O'Brien has successfully built collaborations between the Sleep Disorder Center and the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology. She has published more than 75 original manuscripts and more than a dozen invited reviews and book chapters. Well, Dr. O'Brien, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
My first question is, why is it so unusual for sleep researchers to be involved with stillbirth or pregnancy in general?
I think that's a great question. It's very common for pregnant women to be excluded from research studies in general. And so this is a population that often gets missed when a lot of research is going on. And it's also common for pregnant women to have trouble sleeping. So I think historically, a lot of people just assumed that, you know, post-sleep was normal in pregnancy and really didn't pay too much attention. But that's changing, and we are learning that post-sleep in pregnancy can contribute to serious health outcomes such as gestational hypertension, preeclampsia, gestational diabetes, and preterm birth. With regards to stillbirth, I think a few people thought about maternal sleep in this context. There wasn't really any big push, if you like, but there's certainly been an increase of a real uptick in interest in sleep in the context of stillbirth since the sleep position was found to be a risk factor for stillbirth in a big study from New Zealand several years ago. So I personally have been interested in the intersection of sleep and pregnancy for about 15 years, but that's probably because of my unique background.
And in your 15 years in this field, have you seen much change? Have you seen much progress in terms of what we're learning?
I have. I think when I first started out in this field, there was very little. There was one or two studies coming out of Australia at that time, but that was about it. And interestingly, in the last 10, maybe even less, maybe even 5 years, there's been such a huge increase in people being interested in this topic, which is great because I think it really pushes our knowledge forward and we can potentially intervene sooner and help women have better outcomes.
How did you get into the area of sleep research as it relates to pregnancy in the first place?
Well, I have a unique trajectory, I guess, because I started my career as a researcher in the field of sudden infant death syndrome. So I was recruiting pregnant women for research studies and also studying newborns while they slept. But, you know, studying newborns while they sleep, I realized that I really knew very little about what was going on when they slept, and I wanted to get extra training. At the time, that was not available in the UK, which is where I did my training. So I moved to the US, I relocated to the US, and I started learning more about sleep. And in that time, I was doing research into pediatric sleep and how pediatric sleep problems can affect health and behavior. And I was fascinated by, you know, what we do when we're asleep can affect how our health is and how our behavior is. But always in the back of my mind during that training, I was wondering how that applies to pregnant women. So after I finished that training fellowship with children, I specifically wanted to build a program of research that was focused on maternal sleep, and the University of Michigan was very open to that, and here I am.
So you already touched on this in the beginning of our conversation, but I'd like to dive a little bit deeper into the role that maternal sleep has on babies and their health during pregnancy.
Right. Well, we spend about a third of our lives asleep, and what happens in that time can have a major impact on our health when we're awake, and yet few people until recently have really taken an interest in learning about that. So I think in terms of the role of maternal sleep on pregnancy outcomes, we're really just beginning to learn in the last, you know, maybe 5 or 10 years, but especially in more recent times. There have been studies to show that poor sleep in pregnancy, including conditions such as sleep-disordered breathing, is related to fetal growth restriction, preterm birth. It's also related to maternal health problems such as high blood pressure or gestational diabetes. And these can be serious problems. And of course, more recently, since the Auckland stillbirth study several years ago, you know, we're now focusing a bit more on sleep position in terms of a risk factor for poor outcomes, specifically stillbirth. And since we can modify maternal sleep and we can help with improving maternal sleep, this is clearly an area I think that we can target for intervention.
So some of your studies have looked at treatment for sleep apnea and preeclampsia in pregnant women. Can you dive a little deeper into what you've learned and the findings that you've uncovered in that regard?
I think an important thing to touch on is that it, not just us, but other studies also have found that in women with preeclampsia, there's quite a high proportion that have undiagnosed sleep apnea. And that could be playing a role in the high blood pressure, because we do know from studies in the non-pregnant population that sleep apnea is related to high blood pressure, and you can treat the sleep apnea and you can improve the blood pressure. So that, you know, got me very excited in terms of my work with pregnant women, and we were funded to do a study looking at treatment using a CPAP device, which is a mask device that women wear at night when they're sleeping. It basically holds their airways open. And we use this in women with high blood pressure. And the idea was, if we can treat underlying sleep apnea, because many of these women will have it and don't even know it, can we help them control their blood pressure? And if we are helping them control their blood pressure, that would be, you know, an incredible finding, because it's not a drug, it's not an invasive device, and women can, you know, wear this at home every night. We don't have the final results yet, so I can't share the final results, but it's, you know, anecdotally, it's looking positive. It seems that when women are using this treatment, we can keep their blood pressures from rising, we can keep them pregnant longer, and the babies are born with higher birth weights. So we think it's a good thing, but we're just waiting for the final analysis.
That's fantastic. Let's talk about maternal sleep a little bit, especially in the third trimester of pregnancy. We hear a lot of myths. We hear a lot of advice that we're not sure if it's correct or if it's just a myth. But what have you learned about maternal sleep position in the third trimester of pregnancy?
Well, this is all very recent data in the last, you know, 4 or 5 years. And I think what we are learning is that supine sleep is a risk factor for stillbirth, particularly with late stillbirth, meaning, you know, after 28 weeks or so. And several studies have shown similar results. All of these studies suggest that the risk for stillbirth is about 3 to 5 times higher in women who sleep supine, meaning on their back. And these results are independent of other known risk factors for stillbirth, so they're not being explained by other things that we already know are risk factors. And recently, the New Zealand group, who were the first to show this, have found that the greatest risk is actually in term pregnancy, so those who are 37 weeks or more, compared to preterm pregnancies. Now, why might this be? I think, you know, this is a plausible relationship, because if you think about the large uterus, which gets bigger as pregnancy goes on, and it presses on the maternal inferior vena cava, which is a large vein that carries deoxygenated blood from the lower part of the body back to the heart, and this compression by the pregnant uterus squishes the vessels, and it means that there's less cardiac output, less blood flow to the heart, less cardiac output, and so ultimately reduces blood flow to the placenta, which is where the baby gets, you know, its oxygen, its nutrients, and so forth. So what we think is that the baby is therefore getting less oxygen when mom's on her back, and there are certainly studies that show that there are changes in behavior and blood flow to the baby that are consistent with a lower oxygen environment when the mom's on her back.
You seem very passionate about your work and the results that you've been able to churn out from your research. What about your job and your research is most fulfilling to you?
Oh, this is, what I do is not like a job to me. This is my passion, as you say. The fact that we truly believe that we can make a difference to women's pregnancy outcomes by helping them with their sleep is just a huge thing, because we all sleep, we all do it. And yet I don't think we realize the impact of having a sleep problem or not having, you know, good sleep. And this is something we can change. And if we can make a difference for one woman and her baby, then that's been worth it.
Some of your studies involve women in the country of Ghana. That is really interesting to me. Can you tell us about your work in Ghana and the findings of those studies?
Sure. So the University of Michigan has very strong ties to obstetrics in Ghana. So this was a natural extension from the work that we've done here. We were the first group to investigate sleep and pregnancy in Africa. So we were really excited about this protocol, especially given that Ghana has a high perinatal mortality rate. So it was an opportunity to learn about sleep practices in a completely different country and culture, and whether sleep problems were playing a role in maternal and fetal health outcomes in Ghana as they were in Western countries. And what we found indeed was that maternal sleep appears to be a factor in poor pregnancy outcomes. And we were the second group in the world after the New Zealand group to show that supine sleep was related to stillbirth. So since that study, we've conducted an intervention trial in Ghana to try and modify maternal sleep position. And the results aren't available yet, but they are coming pretty soon.
Let's talk about the sleep behaviors that pregnant women should talk to their doctor about. And more specifically, I think the women who are listening to this podcast would want to know, what tips do you have? If I'm sure pregnant women ask you all the time. You are an expert. You're a researcher in this field. What tips do you have for women who are pregnant when it comes to sleep?
Well, I think, you know, many pregnant women have difficulty sleeping. It, you know, it is common. I think that's why people have not really paid it a lot of attention until recent years. But there are some disorders that are particularly common that maybe women want to chat to their doctors about. But first of all, I think attention should be paid to sleep hygiene and to make sure that enough time is allotted for sleep, because we know that if people, not just women, but if people, anybody limits their sleep to, you know, short sleep durations such as less than 6 hours for an adult or even less than 7, that can have knock-on effects in the daytime with, you know, daytime sleepiness, poor daytime function, mood problems. So I think the first step is to make sure that you are having good sleep hygiene, you're allowing enough time for sleep, your bedroom environment is restful, and that sleep is occurring in an appropriate time aligned with our internal body clocks, which I know is very difficult for shift workers. And sometimes those changes are enough to improve sleep quality and daytime function. We do know that poor sleep is associated with depression, whether that be prenatal or postnatal. That's the association. So that is something else. If you can address some sleep issues, maybe you can help with your mood. But there are also other sleep disorders which certainly warrant talking to your doctor about. And one of the big ones is obstructive sleep apnea. So this is a condition which is characterized by snoring or gasping for air. It can be treated during pregnancy using a CPAP device, which I just talked about with the study that we did, and that basically holds the airway open at night. And while many women snore during pregnancy just because of nasal irritation, there's some water retention, we do see a significant amount of women that snore during the night, and not all of them will have sleep apnea, but I think the red flags that we've learned as we've gone along doing these studies is that if you are snoring habitually, meaning at least 3 nights per week, or you're gasping for air, or your partner's, you know, complaining the next day that you're choking in the night, and you have high blood pressure, that would be definitely a red flag to get checked out. So if you have high blood pressure, if your baby's not growing very well, and you have these symptoms, then please go see your doctor.
That's really helpful. Let's switch gears and talk about myths. I know there's a lot of myths out there about pregnant women and sleep. Are there any myths out there that are commonly used that you want to debunk right now?
Well, I think really the take-home message is poor sleep and pregnancy might not be normal. I think that's it. That is the take-home message. You know, people have a lot of specific sleep issues that they like to talk about, but I think we really have to get things on the radar that just because you're pregnant does not mean that you have to have poor sleep. It might not be the same as when you were not pregnant, but it doesn't mean that say that it has to be bad.
Do you have any other suggestions for pregnant women in regards to their sleep? Basically, is there anything else you wanted to say that we haven't covered already?
Well, I think the main point is take your sleep seriously. I mean, we talk about diet and exercise, but I think sleep should be that third key factor to look after our health, because what happens during our sleep affects your health, it affects your baby's health. And this doesn't just apply to women with sleep disorders, it applies to every single one of us, because we all have to do it, we all sleep. And even self-inflicted short sleep by burning the midnight oil will increase your risk of gestational diabetes, hypertension, and we know that there are risks for stillbirth anyway. Cesarean sections are higher in women that have poor sleep and preterm birth. So, you know, and also we're learning that sleep position could increase the risk of stillbirth. So I think we really have to pay attention to how we sleep. So that would be my take-home message, is please make sleep an important part of your health and wellness, because not doing so could impact your health and the health of your baby.
Final question. We've spent a lot of time talking about what you've done, what you've accomplished, what you've learned. But let's look into the future for a minute. What goals do you have for your research in the future? What questions still remain unanswered that you think would be helpful for yourself and for pregnant people and really for all of society to learn?
Well, I would like to see healthcare providers thinking about sleep when they see their patients. I think it's one of those topics that really never comes up unless either the patient is so bothered by sleep problems that they cannot function during the day, then they may raise them. But I think, you know, sleep is not taught very well in medical or nursing schools until maybe recent years. So providers aren't picking up on women that are not sleeping. You know, some women are depressed and they're not sleeping because of depression, or they're depressed because of not sleeping, and yet sleep really isn't even addressed in those women. So my goal is that we can have all healthcare providers that see pregnant women start to ask them about their sleep. In terms of where the research should go, I am really fascinated on what the effect is on the fetus. So I think we're learning a lot about the effect on the mother's health, blood pressure, diabetes, and things like that. There's quite a lot of data out there now. What we really don't fully understand is the impact on the fetus, because if we can intervene, I mean, pregnancy really is a window of opportunity. If we could intervene and know how to intervene while a woman is pregnant, then maybe we can set that baby's trajectory for life off on a much better footing before it's even born. So that would be my goal is for the future, is to really get a handle on what we can do while the woman is pregnant that can help make that delivery better and make that baby's trajectory better once it's born.
Well, Dr. O'Brien, thank you so much for doing such great and important work, and thank you for taking the time to appear on our podcast today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
That's all for this edition of the Stillbirth Matters podcast, brought to you by the Star Legacy Foundation. Learn more at starlegacyfoundation.org. I'm Chris Duffy. Thanks for listening.